are here today for work session on two bills and a federal grant application request. I will open a work session on House Bill 3948 and ask our able LFO analyst, Lori Byerly, to give us a presentation on the bill.
Good morning, Chair Morgan, members of the subcommittee. In front of you, you should see a memo from me about the LFO recommendations on House Bill 3948. What I'll do real briefly is talk about the proposed amendments to the bill, and then if you'd like, perhaps the proponent of the bill could come up and talk a little more detail about what kinds of changes were actually made in the amendments. LFO recommends the approval of House Bill 3948 with the adoption of the -A7 amendments, which are attached to this memo. We'd also like to recommend a conceptual amendment that would place the Sustainability Board within the Department of Administrative Services. The reason for this is to kind of help with the fiscal aspects of the board, as well as give this body a little place to belong to. The -A7 amendments do the following. They somewhat modify the membership of the board. They permit the board to receive grants and other funds or property. They add some language that regarding the board activities to clarify some concerns the subcommittee had expressed previously. Also sunsets the board on January 2, 2006. Effectively, this would be at the end of the 03-05 biennium. The later sunset date gives some time for the legislature to act if they want to extend the activities of the board. As we know, things don't always wrap up by June 30th. And also,
was that a prediction?
History has indicated that sometimes it goes beyond that date. And the amendments also provide for the director to be subject to being a confirmation by the Senate. I had also indicated, I don't know if we want to talk about this again, since the board would be within DAS, if that's still a concern. It's fine either way, but if it's an accountability issue, that may not be as necessary as it was previously. The amendments would also phase in the board director and staff as of July 1st, 2002. This gives the board some time to get up and running and hire those people, and also does cut down on the fiscal impact of the board. It also appropriates $100,000 general fund to the board. This is money that came out of the co-chair's budget. The next paragraph shows a typo. It really is $100,000. Below, LFO anticipates that at this funding level, the board could be supported by a full-time director at the PEMD level and a half-time office specialist 2 position. I also realize that the board is not up and running, and there might need to be some flexibility in terms of these classifications, since we don't even have a position description to look at this time. But this does give the board a couple of positions to work with and some funding to get going. So that's all I had.
What we would probably be best in the interest of time today is to ask Mr. Ledger to come forward and present any information that you might want to add on the bill and the amendments. And committee members, I encourage you to ask questions. Mr. Ledger, good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. I'm John Ledger with AOI. What we tried to do was try to take care of several concerns that came up regarding this. From a variety of sources, and I'll just go through them very quickly. Some of them are fairly minor semantic on your amendments. Line 3 on the first page of your amendments, we insert the word significant, and there was a lot of discussion about the issue about incentives and having no significant negative impacts or just no negative impacts. And believe it or not, we get into discussions like this. If the state buys hybrid cars, doesn't that hurt mobile oil? And so we put in words like significant to try to deal with that. There's some things in here that are more serious than others, but we want to take care of everyone's concerns. On line 4 of the amendments, this rewrites the section of the bill that deals with the construction of the board. This was rewritten to stress the collaborative nature of the board. This is not a board to settle disputes. This is not a board for big debates. This is a collaborative, cooperative board. It changes the membership on there. It takes out my favorite part of the bill, which said that it should be a member of the largest business association in the state, but leaves in a representative of business and small business and puts in there 3 members with experience in natural resources, because that's important, community health or economics. Going down a little further on line, a lot of these are just edits, a number of edits. on line 22 of the amendments. It was pointed out that it said the board could accept grants, but didn't say it could have had authority to apply for them, so that wording simply says may apply. Going to the second page of the amendments, line 2, this language was put in to make it very clear to the board that they are not supposed to do things in a vacuum, that they're supposed to go out and seek and consult, get comment from trade associations, all types of organizations, work closely and cooperatively with people. Line 5, this addresses a comment that said it seemed to be, you know, highly focused on environment. We just want to make it clear that they're looking at things that jointly help both economics and community health here, not just environment. That's an important item. Line 9, this was put in at the request of the governor's office because it was thought that if this bill passed, then perhaps nobody could discuss sustainability anymore. This would be kind of like preempt everyone from using the word. So we put this language in, which functionally does nothing except reassure people. On line 15, this is a there was a section in the bill that dealt with Economic Development Department. It was a little vague, and this takes a piece of what they were doing, moves it over to the goals, and removes that little section 11 dealing with Economic Development Department because it was really a little bit superfluous, and it was felt that might spawn a greater bureaucracy. Line 18 makes it clear that the director shall be subject to confirmation by the Senate. Line 22, this is all language that LC felt they needed to put in to make it clear that the money would be appropriated, more of a technical thing. Moving on to page 3, from line 8 down, this is the sunset provision. So the board does sunset after 4 years, a little bit faster than I would like, but I think it's long enough to get a feel if the thing works or not. And if it's not working, then it doesn't, you know, that's fine. It's an experiment. If it isn't working in 4 years, then that's fine. It should sunset. The only other thing of substance really in the amendments that I skipped over, it does take out the provision of the bill that allows the board to have their expenses covered, their per diem, because it's felt that the board members will be people probably that work for a corporation or an association that will get that covered in any case. So what we've done is try to hold down the fiscal as much as we could possibly hold it down and address everyone's concerns with these amendments.
Ms. Byerly, have you got language on the conceptual amendment to have it inserted into DAS?
Chair Morgan, members of the subcommittee, basically it would just be an addition that says there is created within the Department of Administrative Services Sustainability Board.
So this would be on page 2, line 9. Okay, so there is TCOD established and put in, created within the Department of Administrative Services.
And Chair Morgan, members of the subcommittee, I checked with Ledge Council on the language around the fund that was created for the Sustainability Board, and they indicated that that language should still be fine, even if it is within the Department of Administrative Services. I had one other comment on the fiscal impact. If you look at the bottom of that memo, it projects an increase in cost for 0305 because we're phasing in those positions in 0103. If the board, as we've discussed before, the board is able to get those some grant money and stuff, probably a portion of those additional expenditures could be paid for through other funds. So and hopefully this would not be have to continue to be an entirely general fund supported entity.
And I'm sure that the members recall that there actually is three sections to this bill. The first one creates the board. The middle section places in statute the responsibilities of the state agencies in terms of sustainability. And the last section creates the Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University. Are there any further questions or comments on the bill? Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, the definition on page 2, sub 4, line 5, remains in the bill?
It does remain in the bill.
Madam Chair, our witness went to some lengths to tell us some of the vagaries of the English language in drafting legislation and getting the semantics and wordsmithing so that people were comfortable with the end result. I would like to add to that by reading the definition of sustainability into the record. Sustainability means using, developing, and protecting resources in a manner that enables people to meet current needs and provides that future generations can also meet future needs from the joint perspective of environmental, economic, and community objectives. Madam Chair, I note the presence of the word protecting. I want to make a point of the fact that the words using and developing come first, and it is my feeling in voting on this legislation that sustainability means the wise use, the wise development. In some cases, there will be preservation and protection, but much if not most of the function of the Sustainability Board will be the wise use of natural resources. And I would like to be assured that that is a sense of the committee when we vote on this.
The Representative Krieger, if I might just add to that, I think that all of us that are sitting here at this table today represent districts that have been economically and socially whipsawed by the Endangered Species Act and by the environmental regulations that have been put in place over the past 20 years. And I see clearly, I see sustainability as a way to bring the economic and the social aspects of decisions that are being made about the land onto the table and giving them equal importance with the protecting of the resources and the protecting of the environment. I see this as, again, another area where Oregon is blazing a trail and marking a path for other areas of the country that are going to be dealing with these issues. It's imperative, I think, and all of us clearly understand how imperative it is that the economic and the social consequences of our environmental policies be folded into any decisions we make about how we move forward on those issues, and that the impacts that are being felt economically and socially in the rural areas of the state are impacts that haven't done anybody any good, and we find ourselves often in a very ironic position where we've taken all kinds of land out of the productive base and we haven't done a thing to recover whatever it was that we were trying to recover. So I think this adds a level of sanity and a level of perspective to the debate that's going to make or help to make decisions in the future made in the broader context of the social and economic implications.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To make a a specific case, I noticed in the Oregonian newspaper over the weekend that the current forest harvest is 1% of the traditional levels, and it is less than 5% of the Clinton Forest Plan, and that is not wise use.
I would agree with you, Representative Hayden, that the Northwest Forest Plan is obviously not accomplishing even the meager goals that were set out for it. Senator Dukes, you were indicating a comment was...
I was. Representative Hayden was interested in hearing perspectives of committee members, and I've worked a little on sustainability, and harvesting 1% of forest may be a political answer, it may be a negotiated answer, it may be a number of things. It's not caused by a sustainability program, because clearly if you're looking at sustaining timber growth, and you're looking at sustaining wildlife habitat, and you're looking at sustaining stable ground, you can do more than 1%. And so I think we reach political answers for things often and call them one thing or another, but sustainability really, and you gave some good examples of when, had we actually taken all of the pieces into consideration, we might have come to different decisions on our actions. Had we actually invested the money in knowing how many fish there were before we harvested, we might not have the crisis in the ground fishery that we have today. There are times when we have built new roads because we wanted new roads, when maybe a new lane was what we needed. And so we covered over good earth for, because we didn't stop and think. And this board gives the ability for a lot of bright people with a lot of experience to come together and consider all of those different possibilities as they look at communities and try to help communities look at those things. And I hope that this board will help to enable communities to take their futures into their own hands and give them, help them to find the tools to be able to go out and decide, this is, we'd like to take on recycling, how do we do that? Or we'd like to take on this stream here, how do we do that? Or, you know, or we want to control our own destiny sort of thing, how do we do that? There are a lot of communities out there who are already doing it, and sharing will help a lot. We don't have to invent anything here. We just have to help people find it.
Representative Krieger.
Chair Morgan. We dealt with sustainability, you know, on the Board of Forestry for years, trying to, especially on the Tillamook and Clatsop. That was a three-year program trying to get to what was the purpose of the lands rule and the greatest permanent value. I think this may get us away from the either-or scenario. Either you utilize resources to the maximum or you protect them to the maximum. Getting back to the multiple use, I think when you apply the concept of adaptive management, it gives you a lot more ability to make wise choices, and you do that based on what values you're trying to save or what values you're trying to protect. I think that also, I think it, the definition in my mind would tell me that you need to sustain different resources for different purposes, not necessarily across the entire landscape. So I'm hopeful that it will be looked at in that light.
Thank you. Is there further discussion on the bill? What I would propose to do is to temporarily close the work. Should we just go get Representative Westland? Senator Ferriel, did you care to comment on the sustainability bill?
Aye.
Short and to the point. Let's go get Westland and move this
out. Bill should
pass. Yeah, we need one more House member.
Well, there's a first.
We always thought there were too many House members, right?
Not at all.
John, will you carry this in the Senate?
Sure. I had to step off for a moment. Did you mention OSU's piece?
Yes.
Seeing how they're sitting back there worrying.
We're going to do a roll call vote and have the absent members noted as absent.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative West.
My privilege.
First, we need to move the conceptual amendments into the amendments, then move the amendments into the bill, and then move the bill.
That works. just a paranoid.
Senator Ferrioli, the chair would take a motion to move the conceptual amendments into the amendments.
Madam Chairman, I move the conceptual amendments into House Bill 3948.
We have a motion on the table to move the conceptual amendments into the amendments to House Bill 3948. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? And
I'm just voting no because I could.
No, you can't.
They vote yes, you vote yes, and I can vote no. I support it wholeheartedly.
Without objection, the motion passes. Senator Ferrioli, the chair would accept a motion to move the House bill as amended to full with the new pass recommendations.
So moved, Madam Chair.
We have a motion on the table to move House Bill 3948 as amended and conceptually amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Would the clerk please call the roll?
Aye.
Aye.
Westland?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Absent.
Aye.
Aye.
Votes aye, and please have the absent vote members noted as absent. And having received unanimous support from the committee, the motion is passed.
Madam Chairman, isn't that verb fled?
What?
As opposed to absent.
Verb fled?
Fled.
Fled.
Yeah, that verb
fled. Fled.
It's a German word. Verb fled.
It's a German word.
I will carry the bill on the floor and in full, and Senator Dukes has graciously consented to carry the bill in the Senate. Thank you very much.
I'll be back.
Madam Chair, if I could just say something very briefly. I just want to thank the committee for your help on this bill. And also, I know this for some of you, this was not a highly comfortable vote, and I just wanted to thank you for having some faith in us.
Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chairman, in response to the commentary of our good friend Mr. Ledger, it will be he and his members will be uncomfortable if this doesn't work out as planned.
Well spoken, Senator.
We'll know who to come to.
I will close the work session on House Bill 3948 and open a work session on House Bill 3150. And we have 3105, excuse me. We have a legislative analyst, Judy James, here, who's been doing a yeoman's job on some bills for us.
They don't have the authority to mention anything.
That's how this will begin. Now the sustainability police will visit people.
Fabulous.
I'll go from 0.001 to 0.002 on the environmental.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. You just cast a green vote. You better be careful.
He won't be here until 9:45, and we can't wait. Ms. James, could you present to us the work that you've been doing in LFO and the proposed amendments to the bill?
House Bill 3105 would establish a tax credit. Yes, it is.
Oh, good.
Would establish an income tax credit equal to 75% of the market value of foregone crops when riparian land is removed from farm production. Defines a crop to exclude the raising of livestock, defines riparian land to be area within 25 feet of the bank of a water course. Tax credit will first be available in the 2004 tax year. It is non-refundable but may be carried forward for 5 years. Also conforms the definition of specially assessed property to language necessary to implement Measure 50 effective for tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2002. Heard this on Saturday and needed to make a few tweaks to the bill. You have in your packet the A4 amendment. And what that amendment does is clarify the purpose of this is to encourage the voluntary removal of riparian lands from production, from agricultural production, and employ conservation on that land to minimize contributions to water quality. It also changes the 25 feet of land along the water course is riparian. It changes that to 35 feet to make that consistent with a federal program that goes from 35 feet to 150 feet. And it also clarifies the conservation practices used on the land consistent with a 1010 plan administered by agriculture will allow this to continue to apply, because it does otherwise say that if it's required by a federal program, this tax credit would not be eligible for this tax credit. And clarifies how we're going to establish what the credit amount is by specifying that the actual crop that was produced in the year before the tax credit was applied will be used as the basis for establishing the credit.
Madam Chairman, in view of the clarifications, and especially regarding the fact that the cropland had to already or previously be in production, and in view of the fact that we're making this consistent with the application of 1010 programs and plans, and also consistent with the application of federal CRP and other programs, I would move the A4 amendments into House Bill 3105.
Before I accept that motion, which is an excellent motion, could I just ask Ms. James, the revenue was made aware of the amendments.
Were
there any issues that arose?
They said it will still be indeterminate because we still don't know how much land will actually be taken out of production, but the change from 25 to 35 feet is the only real impact.
Okay.
And the Department of Revenue also indicated that this would clarify, the other amendments help to clarify what their parameters are going to be.
Excellent. And I have an indication from the governor's staff that this amendment meets their needs also. And on that, Senator Dukes.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions, and I wasn't quick enough to catch point at which we think we have nailed it down so that it has to have been in some type of a crop.
If you look at the last line of the first page, that deletes the section that talked about if we don't have records, and replaces it with this language.
That's good. Now, I was wondering, there's some piece here, I think it's line 7 on page 2. If the taxpayer does not claim a credit under this section for a tax year, any credit claimed in a subsequent tax year shall be treated as the first tax year. And I understand that to make sure that we get 5 years worth of tax ability under this, but it also does string this thing out a little bit.
But it goes on, if you look at line 11, that paragraph also says that if you put it back in production, you stop the credit.
Yes, it does, but unlike the agricultural tax break that we give, this one doesn't say if you put it back in production, you have to pay back the taxes. And I really wish it did. You could get 5 years worth of tax break and then go plant again. And other than 5 years worth of benefit, we didn't get what we expected to get when we passed the bill and put it out there. And we forewent the revenue for it. So I would love to see the section in there that does the same as the agricultural piece. And I had one more, but for the life of me, I don't remember what it was. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do. Just a general question. Representative Krupp was explaining on Saturday what you do with this land when you don't plant it. And I was curious. Clearly, the purpose of this is so that we don't go disturb the soils and have a better chance of erosion and it sloughing off the land and into the water. But I was curious as to what kind of pesticides and things like that can actually be used on this land, because I think you made a good point. It's going to grow weeds and stuff now, since it's not going to grow crops. And I was curious as to whether anybody had looked at what we're trading off here. Is this land that is now more likely to be sprayed and what have you?
Representative Dukes, I would venture that in the area of the spraying of herbicides and pesticides, that that's a heavily, heavily regulated area, especially in riparian areas. And that if any, if that was the management practice that was proscribed for a particular area, particular problem, that the all of the applicable regulations would be definitely in force and effect there. And I would assume that we've got enough layers of regulation in place to take care of and mitigate for any of the harmful environmental impacts that would be there. And there are, I think Mr. Schellenberg could come forward if you...
And that'd be fine. I don't know a lot about all of this. It's just that I would hate to trade land that is productive today for land that where we're going to put more.
This is things. Also an issue, Senator Dukes, that now that it is on the record could be addressed in the rulemaking process for this too.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want, say, Representative Crupper farmers to think that they were getting one thing and then have the rulemaking say, well, the committee said so, therefore. Maybe Don can.
Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don Schellenberg, Oregon Farm Bureau. Senator Dukes, one of the things that Representative Crupper didn't talk about last time was, as a part of the cost, is you have to establish the riparian area. We don't just take it out of production and then just leave it there. You would plant, if you were wanting to filter runoff, you would plant a grass seed, a grass crop of some kind that would have a dense root system that would tend to absorb runoff before it went off of the property. If you were talking about erosion, you would be planting perhaps trees along there that would prevent erosion. Then you have the management of that riparian area. And that management could include the use of pesticides as prescribed, as Chairman said, as prescribed by the label, or it may include handwork. We wanted to leave the maximum flexibility for the agricultural producer as to how to manage that, and that is the reason that you have the language in there referring to the 10-10 plan. The 10-10 plan, as you may or may not know, is an outcome-based plan where it says this is what we want to achieve. Mr. Producer, do what it takes to achieve that outcome. We're not going to tell you how to do it. Do it in the way that works best for your particular operation and your particular type of land. So that's how I would envision that we would be managing the riparian area.
Let me ask you a question. Don, help me here. You made another good point about planting grass seed, and that's going to help hold down the weeds and the rest of it. What I'm struggling with here is, are we trading off having soils that are less worked because there won't be a crop there, so they're not going to be tilled and all of that? We're trading that off for getting heavier pesticide use on the banks of the streams?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, no.
Okay.
That would not be the case. It may even be less, or it may be the same, probably less. You aren't going to have to do... You aren't going to have the same level of management you would as if you were planting grass seed in the same place for the purpose of grass seed production. That has to be, you have to get as close to 100% pure with that as you can without any weed seeds of any kind. Here, as long as you keep the weeds down and they're not transporting their seeds back into the field, that's what our objective would be there. So I would suggest that it would be less intensive.
Okay, thank you. That takes care of my concerns. Madam Chair, although I would like to see the piece where if they decide within that five-year time frame for which they're able to get the tax credit, that if they decide to take it back and plant crops in it, that during that, for that five-year time period, that they would have to repay it. After that, we've clearly left ourselves out of it, I think, in the bill. But
Mr. Schellenberg, would you like to address that point?
Yeah, Don Schellenberg, Farm Bureau, Senator Dukes. The issue here is, you get the credit only for the year in which you have it in the riparian. So the concept of the language there is you have to commit for 5 years, and then you get a tax credit for 5 years. Now, at the end of that 5 years, for some reason, you want to take it back out. I doubt that would happen, but if you did, then the provision was you can't come back in for another 5 years. I don't see this as being the same as the farm use assessment and and the 10-year tax penalty that's applied to farmland when you take it out of production. I think this is a different issue.
But the way I read the bill, for that 5-year period of time, if during that 5-year period of time you decide to go ahead and plant the riparian area, the cost that you get is, or there isn't a cost, it's that you no longer get the credit. And I'm saying that during that 5-year period, as an incentive, that we should say, if you decide to plant it, then you're going to pay back the tax credit that you've gotten for whatever period of time you've gotten it.
Madam Chair, Senator Nukes, I understand what you're saying. Our intent was that you commit for a 5-year period. You can't take it back out.
Don't think that's in the bill.
And you may be entirely correct, Senator.
If that were in the bill, I don't know how we would enforce that. But if that were in the bill, it would take care of my concerns.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krieger.
Madam Chair, I heard a lot about the cost that the state might incur, and we haven't talked much about the cost that the farmer might be incurring.
I guess so. I am.
I believe that the cost incurred by the state versus the benefit, I think there's a great benefit for the state. I don't know how you'd really measure that, but the cost that we're going to incur for restoration of all streams, forget farmland, even on forest land or even down in rural or in the metro areas, is going to be extreme per mile compared to what this is going to cost the state, and I think you'd have a lot more benefit because these waters are normally upslope of the lower parts of the river. A lot of filtering is going to take place. The metro areas will be the ones that benefit a lot with fish.
That makes sense to me. I'm just... Is there any further discussion or comments on the bill?
Oh, just a question, Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
Pursuing the good senator's questioning, my question would be, wouldn't a mandatory 5-year period of time to participate in the program be a disincentive to some? Wouldn't it be better to invite people in, even if it's only for a year or two or three, and let them try it? Wouldn't they be more likely to stay in once they were in, rather than saying, I don't know if I want to lock that up for 5 years?
I agree with you, Representative Hayden, and I think also that if we look at the big picture here, the ag community is being hit pretty hard with the 1010 regulations and the pesticide use regulations, and we're going to be going into a round of recovery planning type stuff that's going to impact ag land over the next so many years, and that an incentive like this will help people be more welcome to entering into the kinds of things that we're going to be asking people to do. And I think that it's very important to put the program on the table, but also be mindful of the fact that if the program's abused, we're going to have to come in and take another look at it in the future.
Well, Madam Chair, another question. What does happen after 5 years? The tax credit is for 5 years. What is the incentive for the farmer to continue to participate after 5 years? Are we just hoping by serendipity or laziness they will leave it that way and not put it back into production? It seems to me like if you rent land, you pay rent every year for 100 years if necessary. If the government is essentially renting this land for another purpose, that they should pay a credit every year that it's used for that purpose.
Mr. Schellenberg, could you address that issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don Schellenberg, Oregon Farm Bureau, Representative Hayden. The bill, as the language in the bill, does not provide any incentive other than 75%. I mean, it doesn't. Farmers are, and what we're trying to do here, as Representative Krupp said, is get ahead of that curve that they're doing in Washington, where they're requiring it and no compensation at all. Here we want to use the carrot approach, not the stick approach that Washington is using, but use the carrot approach and give landowners an incentive. And the incentive is you go ahead and establish that, and we're going to compensate you for most of your cost. But we want you to do the right thing, the good thing, and so here's an incentive to do that.
Madam Chair,
question of the witness.
Representative Hayden.
Well, then, Mr. Schellenberg, wouldn't we hope that future legislators, if this is a successful program, that we reauthorize it and say to participants, if you wish to continue for another five-year period, you're welcome to do so, and the tax credit will be there.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, this bill doesn't have a sunset on it, so the whole thing doesn't go away. And the way it is drafted, there's nothing to keep you from continuing on. As long as you continue on, there isn't any disincentive not to continue on. Simply says that if you do decide, what this language says is if you do decide to not keep the riparian area, you got to stay out for 5 years. It's not this year you're in, next year you're out, this year you're in, next year you're out. That would become a burdensome thing for the administration of it, was what the concern was. And so we settled on the five-year concept as being kind of the threshold.
Well, Madam Chair, perhaps I didn't understand the concept clearly. The farmer can get the tax credit for 6 years, 8 years, 25 years.
Mr. Schellenberg.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, yes.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Senator Dukes.
Yes, I was just thinking we might want to make this thing renewable, because otherwise the only way to get the tax credit again is to put the area back in production for a year. And then you can qualify for the credit again. Because the one requirement in here is that the land has to have been in production the year before. So is there another way to...
We have a Department of Revenue person coming forward here to address your issue.
Good. I mean, as we were talking about, they only get it for 5 years. It seems to me that if they put it back in production and pay taxes on it and all of that, that they could probably then apply for the tax credit again.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. There are 2 5-year periods in the bill. One is a 5-year carry forward for taxpayers who don't have sufficient liability in 1 year to use it all. They can carry it over for a maximum of 5 years. The other 5-year period has to do with putting it into riparian, taking it out, putting it back into farm production. You cannot then go back into riparian for 5 years to claim the credit. Other than that, a taxpayer who puts it into riparian zone, gives up the farm production, claims the credit each year. There is no maximum period for which they can do that. They can do that for 6 years, 10 years, 20 years. Okay. Once they pull it out of riparian, put it back into farm production, they have to wait 5 years, then they can get back in it and do it again.
Got it.
Thank you, Ms. Buchanan. Are there any other comments or are there any objections to the bill? We will go and get our needed extra folks here.
Okay. I think he's in the hallway.
Together, Cords.
Yeah.
That's how I got my new phone. I dropped it down. Upstairs and it blew up.
Oh, that's what they're made of. Just need to move the A4s to build
sure. And
you get to carry this sucker on the floor.
The renewability of the tax credits and so forth.
Well that got taken care of. That, yeah.
We got it resolved.
Yeah, I thought it was more stuff on the repairs. How to violate the 1010 issues.
I don't know. I just know that in the past we've had certified smart experts say all this stuff was safe.
We are in work session on House Bill 3105. Senator Ferrioli.
And Madam Chairman, I would move the amendments as proposed into House Bill 3105.
Senator Ferrioli makes a motion to move the -4 amendments into House Bill 3105. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is carried.
Madam Chair, and I would move the House Bill 3105 as amended to the FOAs and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair,
thank
if you move quickly, we can save 45 minutes.
Wait. Don't acknowledge that Representative Krupp is here. And I'll speak for him.
We have a motion on the table to move the amended House Bill 3105 to the full Ways and Means with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator Dukes?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Westland?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
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 Chair Morgan?
Aye. And would the record please reflect that the absent members are absent, and House Bill 3105, the motion to move it to full, is passed. I will carry the bill in full. Representative Krupp, will you carry the bill on the House floor?
I would.
And Senator Farioli, would you consent to be the carrier in the Senate?
Yes.
I close the work session on House Bill 3105. Open a work session on a federal grant application request from the Division of State Lands. Ms. James.
Ask the people from the agency to come forward.
Could the agency please come forward?
This is a request to approve submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Interior Fish and Wildlife Service for $750,000. It will be used to prepare a habitat conservation plan and National Environmental Policy Act compliance document regarding the removal and fill permitting process. And we'll let the agency explain it further.
Thank you. I'm making the assumption that this is a timely request. Is that a correct assumption?
It is a timely
assumption?
Request.
Thank you. Ms. Holman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jeanette Holman, the Assistant Director for Administration and Finance of the Division of State Lands. With me today is Eric Metz, who is our fill removal expert. Probably knows more about this than anybody in the state right now. We're requesting this grant. We found out about it last week, and it has to be in this week. So we're speeding along, we hope. This grant would be awarded under Section 6 of the Endangered Species Act, which is a section that provides for cooperation and federal financial assistance to the states. We're asking for up to $750,000 to begin work on a statewide habitat conservation plan for our removal fill activities. The grant could be used for scoping the plan, mitigation, developing a mitigation plan, and for data collection and mapping. An HCP would provide some Endangered Species Act protection, take protection to our Oregon permittees under our removal fill program. We believe that would be a very good service to our permittees. This development of a HCP is also a critical step in moving the state towards assumption of the 404 Clean Water Act program. As you know, last Friday, the governor signed Senate Bill 172 and put us in motion to assume that program from the U.S. EPA and take it over so that we only have one program in the state. To assume, we have to address the ESA issues in the removal fill program. Right now, the federal issues are addressed. These issues are addressed in the federal program through applicants having to go through a Section 7 consultation. And we would hope to address those issues through an HCP that takes care of that for the applicants. This grant would give DSL a huge step up in keeping the process on target. It would be beneficial even if we did not assume the 404 program, but would give us money for paying for consultants and other work to develop that HCP in a much more timely manner.
Questions or comments? Representative Krieger.
Chair, there's $750,000 here. Statewide permit's going to cost a whole lot more than that. I mean, many, 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 many times. It could be in the millions and millions of dollars. Any idea, has anyone ever looked at the total costs? We're doing a little piece here. I'm not saying anything wrong with this, but how do you move forward if there's no dollars anywhere specific for a statewide plan?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, I asked Eric that while we were sitting there, how do we move forward if we don't get any federal assistance? And he said, slowly. I don't know. Have you assessed, Eric, the discussions on 172, the cost of developing an HCP?
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, Eric Metz with the Division of State Lands. We haven't put our too fine a pencil to this yet. We feel that this would be certainly adequate. We've already made a lot of progress in consulting with the services under Section 7 for the state programmatic general permit. We've already done a biological assessment in-house. So we have a huge part of that done. We have to add a mitigation component, do some data collection mapping. So we think this is within reach, and it will make it easier for other applicants, for applicants that don't fall within this HCP under the assumed program, who are fall outside of it. If they have to do their own HCP, they can build on this one. And so I think this would be more than adequate to do a very, very good job.
Follow up, Representative Krieger. Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a great idea. I'd like to see the approval of this so that we can go forward with trying to fulfill what we've been talking about for a long time, and that's streamlining the permitting process for so many of these issues and trying to bring them all into one place. And I think this is a great idea. I think we ought to go forward with it.
Further comments? I would echo Representative Krupp's comments. This is an issue that we spend a lot of time on in the interim, and I know that the division has worked extremely hard to forge the agreement with the Corps. And I think in terms of activity that takes place out on the land, one of the places that was a constant source of, it was just kind of a pinch point in the system, was the transition between the federal and the state level on the permitting. And this is going to ease that pinch point substantially. I think that all of us recognize that we have, as a state, taken on a great deal of responsibility here. But I think we're up to it, and I would like to commend the department on the excellent work that's been done on this bill. This was a world-class negotiating effort here, and I would just like to recognize that. Representative Krupp.
Thank you. One thing I'm not clear on is when, after you receive the funds, if you receive the funds, when will you have completed your work on putting together a policy that complies? Is there a completement date in here somewhere?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, we figure it will take 2 years, and then we'll be back before the legislature again to seek final approval for assumption of the 404 program. We have to have the HCP in place before we do that, or they won't allow us to assume.
So it'd be, Madam Chair, if I may, so Jeanette, you're saying that the HCP needs to be accomplished before the next legislative session?
That's correct.
In so order you can for seek final approval of the 404 permit. Okay, thank you.
Further comments or questions on the federal grant application request? The chair would accept a motion to move the grant request to
Madam Chairman,
the
I would
DuPass.
Move the grant request to the full Ways and Means of the DuPass recommendation.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the federal grant application request from the Division of State Lands to full Ways and Means with a DuPass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Would the clerk please call the roll?
Senator
Dukes?
Aye.
Senator Ferrioli?
Aye.
Representative
Hayes? Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Morgan?
Aye.
The motion is passed, and could the record please reflect that the absent members are absent? Representative Hayden, would you be so kind as to carry this request in the full Ways and Means Committee?
I'd be pleased to, Ms. Chairman.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Jeanette Holman, Division of State Lands. Eric has corrected me. We do not need the HCP to assume 404. It will be extremely beneficial to the to our permittees, but he tells me if we don't have one in place yet, then the services have to go through a 404 consultation or a consultation process under Section 7 before we assume. But this
so,
was,
So, Madam Chair, and Jeanette, then, even though you don't have to have it, your intention, for the record, is still to have the HCP completed by the next legislative session. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Further questions?
That does it.
Thank you very much for the clarification. We have on tap for tomorrow the Department of Fish and Wildlife budget bill. We will, again, start the committee at 8:30. And if there are any changes to that,
8:30,
we will let you know. And if no one has any further comments or questions, I'll move to adjourn. Representative Hager.
The posting on the bulletin board says 10 o'clock, Madam Chair. Will that be revised?
Yes.
Call of the chair, isn't it, ma'am, at this point in the session?
It's 1 hour.
We still have an hour.